My name is Taylor, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA, recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization, which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Chris P. and Anita, have a list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Larry S. will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic. The preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Kate C. will read the steps.
My name is Kate and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Sean will read the traditions.
Got it. Hi, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. 12 traditions. One, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but... Oh. Believe I'm at the long version. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous to set matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such will never be organized, but we may create service boards or communities directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the sixth tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the sixth tradition is Todd.
Hi, I'm Todd. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Stephanie for asking me to do this very special honor. I'm going to read the long form of the sixth tradition, so bear with me. It is long. Problems of money, property, and prestige may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never to go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. You got that? So imagine this, okay? This is what we do not do, okay? Welcome to the Atlantic Group AA Funhouse, okay? For your entertainment value, we've set up a TV in the Duke Room. Hamburgers and hot dogs will be sold, all right? If that doesn't appeal to you, upstairs in the balcony, we have a card game going on. It's $5 to get in, okay? At the break, we're going to have a raffle, right? And it's going to benefit the AA rehabilitation. I'm sorry, it's going to raise money for the Atlantic Group's Rest Your Nerves facility. Okay? And the winner will win an all-expense-pay, 3-day inclusive stay at the newest AA luxury recovery spa, Atlantic Group by the Sea. Is that why we came here tonight? Exactly. No, I came here tonight because the reason I came here was I have a problem with alcohol, you know, and I suffer from alcoholism. So hamburgers, hot dogs, TV, card games, raffles, all that stuff is not going to help me solve my problem. So the reason why this tradition came about was Bill W., one of our co-founders, got totally fired up by the fact that he had remained sober and stayed sober. And he, in conjunction with Dr. Silkworth, realized that they had a solution to the problem. And Bill's, in his ultimate wisdom, decided that, hey, let me go back to the town's hospital where he got sober, where Silkworth worked. Right, and he went back to Charlie Towns, the owner of the hospital, the manager of the hospital, and he said, I've got a great idea. He says, why don't we open up a whole series of facilities related to recovery on all levels, not just in alcohol, but if you had mental problems, we could help you with that. You know, if you needed a hospitalization stay, we could do that too, all in the name of AA. And then he took this idea back to some of the first people who got sober and said, isn't this a great idea? We could get money. We could get people to back us. We could do this. We could start getting so many more people sober if we had all this stuff together. And they said, you know what? It's not going to work. The main reason that it works is that Bill told his story to one other person, Dr. Bob. Ebby told it to Bill. That's the foundation of how this program works. That's our fifth tradition, which we heard last month. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. Therefore, all this other stuff, while it sounds great, it may be great, is going to only divert us from the idea of one alcoholic helping another. It also says in the sixth tradition here that the problems of money, property, and prestige, right? Well, all those things I mentioned at the beginning that we don't do, right? Who came up with them? I did. Who put me in charge? I did. Who benefits from all the monies that are supporting these functions that we don't do? I do. Who put me in charge? Me. Why did I come to Alcoholics? Because I ran my own life. Did it work so well? No. So the reason why I'm here is to tell you that we do not put the AA name, nor in many cases do we put the Atlantic Group's name, on any facility or outside enterprise. None of that stuff is going to work. The only thing that works is us sitting here tonight sharing our experience, strength, and hope with each other, one person to another. In this case, one body, one speaker. It's not that difficult. It's worked before. It's worked for 75 years plus. Why would we change that today? Right? Besides which, we're not here because we are here to raise money. Any money that we make here is given back to AA. We don't sit here and make money. It's not about that. We sit outside on the steps talking one person to another. We talk on the floor. We pray in the corners. We do all that stuff because that's what works. It doesn't matter where we do it. It could be at a diner, at a cafe. It could be on the street corner. It doesn't matter. In the subway. It doesn't matter. That's what matters, is the fact that we do this 12-step work. And that's the point that counts. In the long form, also, it says we need to keep them separated. Later on traditions, you'll hear that, you know, money and spirituality don't mix. Okay. Well, that's the truth, you know, because if I'm the one that's making all this money from charging you to join the card game to buy hamburgers and everything else, who's going to get a resentment? Me or you? Right? I'm going to think I'm better than you because I came up with these ideas. That's not going to help you. Right? It's not going to help anybody. Our sole aim, as it states over and over, is to do 12-step work. That's all that matters. You know, I even do service outside the home group at the group at the general service level. You know, I meet with doctors, physicians, corrections facility people, and what I tell them is that we don't want to be affiliated with their institutions. We are just AA coming to them with a solution for the people that may be there. And over the years that I've been doing this, the amazing thing is that our receptiveness by these institutions is tenfold greater than if I was out there saying, I want to have AA's name put on the marquee at their institution so that they can become an institution for higher AA learning. It doesn't work. That's not what we're about. If you go to the corrections table, you'll see we take meetings into so many different facilities. None of them say, welcome to the Rikers Island Atlantic Group meeting of AA. It's just an AA meeting. That's all it is. And you know what? I've seen people come out of those facilities and join us here, because what they heard there is pure. As it says in our fifth step, you may, or actually in what Dr. Silkworth's letter to the, in the doctor's opinion, he says, you may rely on anything they may say about themselves, because that's what it's all about. We're not trying to promote AA. We're trying to show you that it works. And that's why attraction works far greater than promotion. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Rachel P.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. Oh my gosh, there are so many people here. I just want to thank Randy for asking me to speak today. It's such an honor to be speaking before such a huge meeting, and especially my home group. I got sober March 15th, 2011, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor, and so on. So I was a really good kid. I started off really, like, really strong. I was a good kid. I worked really hard in school. I took what they said in health class really seriously. When I started high school, I avoided alcohol like the plague. I thought it was awful. I was never going to drink. No one in my family was a drunk, and no one, you know, everyone was successful in my family. I was on the right track. I started a magazine my freshman year at the Student Body magazine. I sort of lost my path the second semester of high school. I started partying with the seniors. I thought I was so cool because they would drink with me. But little by little, I started getting worse than all of, even the seniors. I let them take advantage of me by using my house for parties. They didn't like me. They were using me, you know? And I got worse and worse. I was partying with my friends. We would go home from school for lunch and drink. I remember I would spike my iced coffee in the morning with vodka. I thought that was a really good idea. What else? Alcohol was the catalyst for the dry goods that I later began to use. Somehow I managed to get into the college of my choice, and I went, and I was an absolute mess when I got there. I managed to pull it together, although I was getting bombed every single night. I managed to get an internship. Everything looked really, really good on the outside, but inside I was just imploding. And senior year, I had made it that far. I started to lose it. I went home to New Jersey, which always makes me go completely stir crazy, and it was winter break, and that's like a 6-week break, and I started to lose it. I was drinking by myself. I stopped talking to my friends. I didn't care. I was sleeping so much and just only waking up to drink that my mom thought that I was doing much harder substances than I was actually doing. I was just drinking a lot, and eventually somehow it caught up with me. It was like a switch just flicked, and I lost my mind. I literally became delusional. I didn't know who I was. I actually thought that I was Lady Gaga, like, for real. So my parents had to commit me involuntarily to a psych hospital, which was my first, and I was probably the most non-compliant patient that there was. I would argue with the nurses. Psych is one of my majors, so I worked at a psychiatrist's office too, so I knew all of the pills, the ones that, you know, you're supposed to be taking, but I didn't think that I needed them. So they got it in me one way or another. That wasn't fun. That's my main memory from the first hospital. Nothing else stuck, just like the shots, basically, intramuscular, which really, really hurt. So if anyone has to go to a psych hospital, I suggest just taking it, just listening. So I got out, and I pulled it together again for a judge to let me out. I was involuntary, and they let me out, and the first thing I did was get really messed up, like really, all by myself on the back deck of my dad's porch in New Jersey in feet of snow. I didn't care. I was a survivor, so I was gonna... I was going to get as messed up as I possibly could. So I did that, and so it wasn't long before I landed in my second hospital. And the second hospital I detoxed at, I detoxed. It was the worst experience I've ever gone through in my life. I just remember pacing and watching the clock and pacing and watching the clock. When I got out of there, I was still completely delusional. I don't know why they let me out, but they did. I think they didn't think they could help me any more than they already had, which wasn't much. So then it wasn't long before I was in my third. This was 3 in 3 months. So I got to my last hospital, which was a great hospital, and they helped me so much. It was in the acute care unit for 3.5 weeks. I went to their transitional living program, and that is the first time that I went to a meeting. They required us to go to AA meetings. I had no idea what they were talking about. I didn't know what the big book was, the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I knew that I had to get one. So I asked my family friend to be my sponsor, and she said she would be my temporary sponsor. So I wasn't ready for the real world, or so I was told, and they shipped me down to Florida after that for a 90-day program. And after that, it was really scary. I was separated from everything, like alcohol, everything I wanted, and I had nothing. I was completely vulnerable. I was terrified, and they had me go to a halfway house, which I thought I was above that. I honestly had no humility whatsoever. So I was at halfway house for 8 months. I was not working a strong program at all. I did not like AA. I really didn't like it. I would not go to meetings. I had to have a sponsor to live in the halfway house. My parents weren't having me home. So I got one, and she's here tonight. She moved back too. And when I got back here, I found the Atlantic Group through a series of fortunate events. And I am so, so happy here now. I actually have pulled things together for real this time. In the last year, it took me getting through an awful first year, but in the last year, I finished my last year of school. I just graduated. I lost all of the weight that I gained my first year. Just saying, ladies, it's not forever, okay? Just had to throw that out there. I was terrified and I hated it. So that's good. I quit smoking. I found the best sponsor that I could possibly imagine, just like beyond my wildest dreams. And I've been working the steps with her. I've been doing step 9, amends, making my past behaviors right, trying to go to the people that I hurt the most. They're very difficult, but so rewarding. And by doing those, the 9-step promises have become true for me. I am getting just everything, you know, job interviews that I will actually show up for, because before I wouldn't bother. I just didn't care. And I don't know, real friends, genuine friends. I've never had real friends before, but today I have the most amazing friends who actually care about me and who will call me. People will call me to find out how I'm doing. Like, That never happened before, and I call other people just to see how their day is going, to catch up, to find out how they're doing. If you're new, it gets better. It gets a lot better, and I know at first it's awful. I'm so impressed by people who do this without being locked up, because I don't think I could have. Thank you. So yeah, if you're doing this, if you're here, then welcome. You're in an amazing place and you're safe. You're with people who care about you, and just try to get to know them, because these people will save your life. Thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Sharon.
Hi, my name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic. And I bring you greetings from Los Angeles, and I bring you greetings from my sponsor, Clancy, who's told me to tell you all to shape up. So that's it. Then I hung up. No, it's great to be here. I have a lot of people I love and care about very much. Am I not eating the mic? Okay. There we are. Okay. So I came to you on August 20th, 1975. I woke up with my jaw wired shut, broken in three places, my nose broken. I had been thrown out of a car in Palm Springs, California. Had a really good time, I guess. I don't know. I guess I landed in the hospital. Something happened in the hospital on July 27th, 1975. This little girl from Iowa, where I grew up, I could have been anything I wanted to be growing up. I'm the only alcoholic in my family. I had a lot of love, a lot of opportunities. And I'm lying on a gurney because I've been found by a gardener by a pool. 10 more feet, you'd have another speaker. And I'm lying on that gurney, and I have to write who I am because they're prepping me for surgery because I was pretty messed up. And I'm writing my name, I'm writing that stuff on a police clipboard. And what I saw in front of my name, if this broken face could have smiled, it would have. It said, victim. I was like, yes. I had an identity. I was so happy to have one. The 3 years prior to that, my address had been Bourbon Street, so I wasn't even pretending anymore. So I was sitting above a liquor store in West Los Angeles. See, I was on my way to Hawaii from New Orleans because it was going to be different there. I had become unemployable even at the Lower Decatur Street stinky bars down there. They asked me to go and not come back. I tried to work in Southern California. They said, no, lady. I was about 175 pounds of bloated, toxic, alcoholic mess. I had had my gallbladder blow up, I had pancreatitis, I had liver spots on my face, I wore a red dashiki and a Panama hat, unemployed, didn't bathe, water hurt. And so I am on my way to Hawaii, but I don't make it. I'm now living above a liquor store with a guy that felt sorry for me, came all the way out in the desert from Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood, which was a real alcoholic bar. Where I first saw the Big Book, actually. She was too drunk to drive. We took away the keys and we gave her a toast. I go for you, Chris. Go to A&A. You know, I had no idea what A&A was, but this guy was from that bar. He had heard what had happened to me. He came all the way to Palm Springs because I had nowhere to go. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. He picked me up. He brought me to his place. He bought me cheap red wine. I'm wired up. Wires outside, wires inside. I stick a straw in the cheap red wine. I stick it through the wires where the tooth had been kicked out, and I'm sucking on cheap red wine because I'm a drinker. I wake up a drinker on August 20th, 1975. He taps me on the shoulder that morning, and he said, "You're really depressing me. You have to leave." I was like, oh, man. The beauty of that day was I was tired. I hope you've had that day, all of you under the 90 days, that you're tired and your way is just not working. You can't fix the problem with the crazy head that brought you in here. And that day, he said, "We gotta leave." And I called my mother in Iowa. I've got three other siblings. My brother's a doctorate. My sister's a Mensa. She had a full ride to Barnard College. I have a great family. And I am the alcoholic that broke every single one of their hearts over and over and over again, and nobody knew alcoholism. But that morning, August 20th, 1975, I had a moment of grace because I called my mother, Colette. I couldn't talk. First 3 months in AA, I couldn't talk. It was a blessing, really. And my mother had called every hospital in California until she found me. She had gotten a phone call from someone, but they didn't tell her exactly where I was. So for 2 nights, my mother didn't sleep. My mother sleeps at night because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. If I think this thing is all about me, I just have to think that my mother sleeps at night. It is not about me at all. And my mother said, "Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army." And if my mother would have sent $20, you'd have another speaker. Norm Alpie, used to talk about seconds and inches. And at that moment, my life was seconds and inches that I was going to find my way to you. I looked down. There's a phone number sitting there. It was that girl drunk in the bar in Barney's Beanery with the big book that we gave a toast to. I am not relating any of this that morning. I'm tired. I need a place to stay. I've got this wired jaw. I'm a victim of violent crime. They caught these guys. I have a detective. And I am tired. I'm tired. And I called that number because it was sitting there, and she was dating the guy that I was staying with. And it just happened to be there. I called the phone, and she answered, and she said, "I can't help you, but Suzanne can." And Chris couldn't 12-step me that day because she was in and out of AA, in and out of AA, in and out of AA, and she was out that day. She died at 31 years old in St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica, not even recognizing me. Alcoholism doesn't care who you are, what kind of talents you have, where you come from. If you have alcoholism and you're here, we are the lucky ones, absolutely the lucky ones. And Chris had me call a woman, Suzanne. I don't call strangers. I have a backpack. I hitchhike coast to coast. I have a book in there called Be Here Now. I have my life together. Now it's like, I don't need help from strangers. I haven't needed anybody for a long time with this drinking. I have a wall up between me and you, and it feels good that way. I still have to fight that self-sufficiency so much of the time. But once God has entered in my hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous, which it talks about on page 25 in the big book, there's no turning back. You know, I'm like the miner, the one that's with the belt up over his gut, and he picks up his pick one more time, and he hits mother load. And once that happens to you, you get to mine it for the rest of your life and give every single piece away, and it's a joyous, amazing way to live. No matter what you have in the bank, no matter what you're wearing, no matter who you're calling, no matter what trip you're going on, where you work, when you've had that spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, it is such joy. No matter what goes on in your life, you get to have joy and hope. There's hope here. Every day I wake up with hope. So this stranger lady knew exactly where I was, and so she had these girls come get me. She told me exactly where to sit. I had, you know, my cheap red wine and my, you know, my other cigarette kind of thing over here. And she said to me, she said, "Put down your joint and put down your alcohol. Put down your drink." I thought, how does she know I have both? And I sat on the steps, and this woman came and got me out of the car, and there was another beautiful woman in the car. Two beautiful women, shiny teeth, shiny car, shiny hair, shiny life, shiny, shiny, shiny. I didn't want to be with them. I didn't like them. I saw them coming. I couldn't even look at them. They were too bright. Everything was bright, bright. I mean, my favorite bar was the Bastille in the French Quarter, where we painted the windows black so not a thread of light got through there. So that's the way I liked it. Now these shiny people in this car, they put me in the back. I am so tired, I can't even argue. I can't talk, so I'm in the back. I don't know where we're going, but now I can't get out. It's a Volkswagen. There's no doors. I detoxed in AA. I had that, I call it that Tiffany smell, that reeking of alcohol smell. I love when I walk into a room, "Let me at him, where's the newcomer?" I love that smell. And that's where I was. That's, you know, everybody said to me, I didn't know where, I'm in a church, and they said, "Where are we? These people talk incessantly about themselves." I had a newspaper clipping in my pocket from the Palm Springs Herald in case somebody said, "What happened to you?" Nobody did. Nobody cared. It's just like, it walked by me and go, "Look at, she's tired. Maybe she'll make it." Or, "Look at her. Maybe she'll make it." And it was like, how'd they know I was new? I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know where I was. I was the little girl in Iowa that my dad had to go out and buy all those weird UFO books so that he could have something to talk to me about, because I like Gandhi a lot, and I had UFO on the mind. I knew the mothership left me there, and I was going to wait for it out in the soybean field or the corn field, wherever. I would go out there and sit at night. So my dad started to read about UFOs, so I was, like, really into UFOs. So here I am at my very first meeting, not knowing I'm at a meeting of alcoholics, and I was thinking I'm at a church. They're going to ask me, what'd you do with your life? Did you have any potential? Look at you. Somebody, I guess, raised my hand. I don't remember much except the speaker was perfect for me. Because all I remember him saying was, I knew the ship was coming back and say, you can come home now, Bill. Spaceship people. My spaceship people are here. I'm with my spaceship people. There was like, for a minute there, this little ember I brought in here just fanned for a second. And then, I don't remember what, and then I saw this guy come over and he had this book and it said Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was the literature guy selling me the book for payment terms. He went on and on about payment terms, I finally gave him a quarter and he shut up. So I didn't know what it was, but I thought, oh, Alcoholics Anonymous. He wrote in pencil where I was, he got my name out of me, and he wrote my sobriety date in pencil. I still have that. His name was Maurice Zalatau. Big meeting in the sky with Clint Hodges and Norm Alpe and Chuck C. and a lot of the greats I got to hear. Jimmy Ryan, you know, growing up in California, I heard a lot of speakers. But the kindnesses I remember are the kindnesses from people that took me to the coffee shop and drove me home and gave me a floor to sleep on and looked at my little scorekeeping I was doing. A man named Chuck Nesbitt looked at me one night and he said, what are you doing? And he looked at my list, you know, keeping track of all the rides and the $20 that was given to me or clothes that was given to me and anything. And he said, Sharon, put that away. He said, one day you're going to have a car, a license, insurance, registration, all in the same name. How's he know that? Yeah. I thought, you guys are so smart. How are you reading my mail here? He said, you'll be able to give rides to somebody. You'll have a car. You'll have a couch someone can sleep on. You'll be able to give that person who's starting a new job clothes in a cleaner bag outside after the meeting. I thought, how do you know about the clothes in the cleaner bag? Somebody did that for me. It was his wife. He said, the way we wouldn't be paid back is pass it on. Pass it on. I was like, the guy trusted that I could pass it on. I had a lot of great people in my first few years of sobriety that touched me in many ways. That took the time to see what the newcomer's thinking over there in the corner. You know, there's so many new people here tonight. I'm so glad you're here. What a vibrant, amazing group. There's so many people in here that have loved me through my thick and thin times. But I'll tell you the one thing if you're new, listen to me just for a second. Come back to me and then you can go back to your favorite subject, which is you. If you're good at being new, you're thinking about yourself a bit. All right, make your feet your friend. Your feet will get you to AA. Your head will not. Your head will judge everybody, or they don't understand, or my case is different. But my feet have been smart feet for 37, almost 38 years. And I have walked life with you. I have never been alone. This is a we program. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. We admitted. I have done nothing alone in Alcoholics Anonymous, even when I wanted to. And if you have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you are going to be spiritually inconvenienced the rest of your life. So get used to it. It's a good thing. I had a lot of amends to make. I was the little girl who, I mean, it was the 60s. I went off to college. It wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. There was a lot going on. I had my heart broken. I was telling somebody today, I was at the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago, next to Paul Newman, passing out leaflets with my little sorority outfit on. And by the end of the weekend, I got jeans on, barefoot, power to the people, behind Dick Gregory, marching to Mayor Daley's house, getting tear gassed and loving every minute of it. I had a transformation. My father and mother didn't know what happened to me. I was a little artist. I couldn't paint anymore. I had dignity. My dignity was gone. If you drink alcohol like I drank alcohol, if alcohol did something spiritual for you, I mean, why go to India if just drink some Canadian Club and I'm having the experience? It was a lot faster and a lot more fun. alcohol was spiritual for me. I was seeking something in my life. I had that God hole. I had no idea what it was. And I did a lot of different... I worked in the Pan Am building. The summer of love, 1969. Can't tell you much about that summer. But I kept that job at that ad agency because we had a two-hour martini lunch every day. It was awesome. And I would go with no sleep, and I went back to art school, and I couldn't paint. And I went to Colorado, and I met Bob Dylan, came to California. I think it was Bob, not sure, but, you know. I got kicked out of my first commune for drinking. I drank their bong wine because they didn't drink like I drank. I got kicked out of a commune in northern Wisconsin because I drank. They were like just kind of hootenanny organic people, and I'm like blowing the socks off their life. I ended up joining the carnival because my mother cried, and I said, "Mom, I'm not hurting anyone but me. Leave me alone." I had a lot of amends to make when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up in Bogalusa, Louisiana jail. You know, roaches dragging my shoes across the floor at night. Oh my God, what am I doing in here? I had a lot of amends to make. And I was really afraid of working these steps. But I've been sponsored beautifully. Beautifully. Because I've had three sponsors. My first sponsor, Janet, 5 years. My second sponsor, Ginny, 5 years. And then Clancy was the perfect time of my life when I was 10 years sober. And I needed somebody louder than my head. And he said, "We'll try." And so we've been trying for the last 27 years. And it's been great. But each sponsor has had the experience. And they take the time to come back and sit on that rock with me where I'm sitting and tell me what's ahead. Look, and I believe them. Because you were always reading my mail. You always knew that one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, you lit up that kindling in my life. You lit it up. You gave me something that I'd never had before, which was hope. It had left. My life got darker when hope got up and walked out of the bar wherever I was. And you gave me hope. There was something about you I knew that I believed. Let's never forget that. Let's be the best here, not just good. As Lincoln said, good is the enemy of the best. We've got to be the best here because there's alcoholics dying every day. Every day. We are the lucky ones. Let's keep this and keep it as it is and pass it on. Because I don't know, my son doesn't seem to have the problem, but I don't know if he's going to have children and his child might have the problem. I would hope that that child could find what I found, which is this tired, worn out, sick alcoholic that you treated like a piece of gold when I walked in here. Thank you. My mother thanks you. My family thanks you. People I love thank you. My life took off. I did the 4-step, 5th step, went home. Made amends to my dad, and I couldn't even look eye to eye for 4 years. My dad sat down and had breakfast. I couldn't sit down and have breakfast with him. It was too much emotional pain between me and dad. I changed my name to Cher, Share, and he wasn't very happy about that. It's just because he saw what I was sharing with. And I got to go home and make my simple amends to my dad. My dad said he always wanted me to be happy, and so my sponsor said, "Then that's what you do when you call home, you be happy." And at 2.5 years of sobriety, he came out and walked me down the aisle, saw all of you, bought the big book, loved you guys, and you guys welcomed him. We had a great time, and somebody snapped a picture at the end of the wedding, and we were eye to eye. I didn't expect that. Panels, conferences. We did road trips. We just had so much fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. My jobs got better. Every job I got would get better because you taught me to not tell them how I am because, we depress people if they really, they don't really want to know. He taught me how to work, be a worker among workers, and every single job I've gotten has been better and more fulfilling. But my true love is being in the middle of you and passing this on, one alcoholic to another alcoholic, and I've had that opportunity to do this for many, many years. And there's many ripples in the pond in this room tonight in many ways. And I'm so full of joy because I get to see the ripples hit the shore every once in a while with how you're doing and that you're doing great and that you're sponsoring and things go on and on. And I just, this marriage was great, and I had a baby, and Ginny was my sponsor, and she said, "It's time to make financial amends to your dad," and I thought, okay, I got a pretty good job. So I called him, and he said, okay, it's this much. He had run the calculator tape. He had read the big book. He had put it on page 78 for most alcoholics owe money and told my mother, if he's not home and I call, if I stay sober long enough, I'll get to this part of the big book. Here's the bottom line, circled in red. That's what he told my mother, but he was home, and he gave me the figure, and I said, oh, my God, that's too high. I called my sponsor, and, you know, he just wanted his own money back, you know, the cars, the everything that I took. And so I called my sponsor, and she said, okay, then call your dad back, and let's start. See if he'll accept your payment terms, and he did. And I had a very smart sponsor who was experienced, strength, and hope. She gave me just a little more. She wanted more for me than I thought I could have for myself because she said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? He's got three other perfect children, the alcoholic in Southern California. I say, as I say to my sponsor, yes. What do you want? I'm in the corner. I can't get out anyway, right? So she said, put a note with that check you send to your father. And don't be late. You're an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe the only one he'll ever see. Oh, my God. Can't be late. So the note went with the check. I told him about the prison panel I was on, I think, in the first note. But my dad got a note, a card, a letter with that check. It got easier for almost, I don't know, about 5 years. And then he called me between Christmas and New Year's. He said, Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore. Debt's free and clear, but don't stop sending me your notes. And I got a brand new relationship. That sponsor was smarter than me. Smart. She knew that I could have a relationship with my father that was innocent and good. And he was killed in 99 in a second. He was gone, and we were right. And we were right. And 10 years of sobriety, my husband picked the newcomer in the room. It wasn't easy. I kind of went a little crazy, but I stayed. I did things like cut my hair, dye it different colors, and I came to every meeting because no one's getting my seat. It's my seat. And I stuck my feet out and crossed my arms, and this lady walked over my feet once, and she looked at me and looked at the new girl. I knew she was with a new girl. And then she said to the new girl, look at Sharon. She's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got? I was like, oh, God, I heard her. You know, it was great because I heard her. I didn't want to hear her. I didn't want to change. I didn't want to do my inventory. And Clancy and I did an inventory. I gave him the keys to my ex-husband's car. I was going to drive it low tide in Venice Beach. But I had to pay attention to myself. And he said, you walk through this with dignity and grace so you can be an example to others. Because I wanted revenge. But I heard the example thing again. Smarter than me, louder than me, ahead of me. Experience, strength, and hope all around it. After about a year and a half after that husband left her, then she said, and we're very good friends, she gives me a cake every August. She had a little baby boy. We celebrated Mother's Day together this last Mother's Day. Our boys are 28 and 25. Her name is Jill, and Jill said, I knew I could walk through it because I watched you. It's none of my business who gets my example. None of my business. I just have to be a good example and keep my face to the sun and do what I'm supposed to do today. Page 77, our purpose, our real purpose. There it is. Look for it my whole life. When did they sneak that in there? Is to fit myself. Fit myself. A lot of work there. Daily. To be of maximum, not minimum, service to God and the people about us. And it doesn't say just AAers. The people about us. So I don't get to judge who gets my kindness. I just have to be aware and alert and give it. After 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days or so, after being in the hallway, I met a man named Casey who was in our group, and I fell in love. Fell deeply, deeply, deeply in love. And him with me. Gosh, we had 24 years together. Of 18 of those years, we didn't live together. We were building careers. We were busy in AA. We were sponsoring people. We were doing a lot of life. I was making amends to the carnival. That was a whole new thing. I was a really nasty tequila-drinking shooting gallery girl, and the little boys would want to win their teddy bears, and I'd pop that metal piece up and say, no, you didn't. You didn't get three down. You got two. No, you didn't. You know, I was so mean. So my son went to a Catholic school, and I sponsored this nun, and yeah, it's a long story, yeah. But they have a carnival every spring, and for 8 years I worked that carnival and bought ride tickets. It was on my list, and there was no way to do it. I didn't think there was any way to do that, and there was. the world will present itself. Stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and stay awake. Look for the newcomer. For 18 years we lived together, then we got engaged, and then my son walked me down the aisle in Las Vegas. It was a lot of fun to elope. It was so much fun. And I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous since the day one, whether I want to be or not, whether life has eaten me up or not, I am here. You are my family of understanding. Where am I going to go? This is where God is. I need God with skin on. I need to come here and sit with you because I forget there's hope some days. I sit here and you read chapter 5 and I go, oh, thank God there's hope, like I never heard it before. And my sweetheart, Casey, we went all over the world together. We did AA. The coffee pot was on. Many of you knew him. And 2 years ago, he passed away, 2 years ago Monday, malignant melanoma, and it was rough. But he was a tough guy, but taught me so much courage, And I remember one day I was having a really kind of rough day, and he's doing 2 years of clinical trials, right? When he would go into that clinic, people were happy to see him come because they knew they were going to have a better day because Casey was there. He went in there to bring joy to them. Where do we learn this? Is to get out of yourself, go make somebody else happy. Go do something for somebody else. And we're sitting there and the wind is blowing and he said, well, Sharon, do you believe in the wind? It's like we're having a cup of coffee and it's like, okay, grasshopper sensei, I don't know what's going on here. I said, yeah, Casey, I believe in the wind. He said, well, look outside. Do you see the wind? And I went, yeah, that's blowing down the street, and it's hitting the window over here, and look at that tree going. He said, really, you see the wind? Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't know where I was with all this going on. He said, you see the effects of the wind, right? Oh, yeah, yeah. I see the effects of the wind. I don't see the wind. He said, that's what I do every day. I don't see God all the time, but I go out and I look for the effects of God. Added a whole new dimension to my life, a whole new color to my rainbow. I look for the effects every day. If you are having a bad day, take a walk out in the street and smile at somebody. Just go out in the street and smile at somebody. And my family sleeps at night because I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a vital member with my shiny link in the middle of this with you. I don't want it to end with me. I want my example to mean something to somebody else. I want to be able to pass along the miracles that have been given to me in the middle of you. I want to know that when you put me on the pyre of life, as Mother Mystic Blake, who I love, when you put me on the pyre of life, he was sitting on the Ganges one night, and all these boats on fire kept going by and going by and going by, and he looked and he figured out what they were, that they were. It was a night that they could light their relatives and loved ones on fire and send them down the Ganges with everything they loved in the boat, and they were on fire and brilliant. It was a brilliant night, and he just said, wow, when you throw me on the pyre of life, may I be all used up. So use me up. I have had the best time being with you in New York, and I love you. Thank you.